You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Tracy Lawrence in studio, 809 on the West Coast. What's up, man? It's not easy to get these guys to come in and do this in studio and sound this good. Here's the big line of the whole song. Yes, I've got it through my head. I just can't break it to my heart. I've got it through my head. I can't break it through my heart. Anyway, joining me to talk musical lyrics is Dan Lamont of the Washington Post. Dan, how are you? Good Friday afternoon. Good Friday morning.
Good morning.
How about the last couple weeks relative to being a reporter that covers military stories for the Washington Post? No shortage of topics, a cornucopia for a writer, I think.
Yeah, it's definitely been busy. Definitely been some long hours and some curveballs, but that's why we do what we do. I would say one of the things that I'm definitely picking up on is, you know, you go back 4 or 5 years and, you know, you could specialize in being an Afghan guy or an Iraq guy or something like that. And now you need to know way more about way more places.
You know, it is interesting. I mean, and the way that it's jumped around, it's, Syria different than northwestern Iraq and into eastern Syria. And then Afghanistan different than both of them. And then the different parts of Afghanistan. For those of us who have been, we all know it's not one place. It's a variety of different things that you'll encounter. And then you get to flip over on the other side of the world, and you get what's going on in the South China Sea and on the Korean Peninsula. Kind of a journalism question. How do you prioritize? Do you guys sit in a meeting and talk about what you're going to do? Do you get assigned stories to cover? Or do you kind of make recommendations and say, hey, I think this is the most compelling thing? How does that happen?
So it's really been trying to get out front to the extent you can. North Korea has been a story for quite some time,
right.
Same for Syria. So it's really trying to kind of get a sense for, what we're missing, what people haven't been talking about that's a part of these stories that, that should be pointed out or should be explored. So some of that comes through meetings, some of that comes through, the reporting and then kind of discussing it amongst ourselves. And it helps that we have people on the ground in, pretty much all these countries.
So talk to me about, and this is kind of the business of journalism and reporting. As a newspaper as big as the Post looks at the news, how does it come to you on a daily basis? Does it come to you? Do you have discretion in what you cover? Are you assigned certain stories? Or are you expected within the military genre to constantly know what ought to be written about, and that's what you get paid to do? How does that work?
So there's things that we track every day. I mean, one of the things that we're tracking every day, working out of the Pentagon is, just where the leaders are and what they are doing, and that drives some of the news coverage. I made the trip back with Secretary Mattis in February, and he's going to make news along the way. So you're going to cover those things, but you have to be spun up on the backstories on things like NATO before you arrive in Belgium.
Right. So on a daily basis, it's Mattis is here. The president is here. Dunford is here. So that's kind of your situation map?
That's a piece to it. I mean, the other elements to it are, you know, what's changing on the ground in some of these places.
Okay.
Whether you're talking about, the parliament somewhere or more in terms of, the individual battles that are taking place in northeast Syria and places like that.
All right. Let me read you an email. Hey, Mac, I'm curious. I enjoy when Dan comes on, and I used to do a little bit of news writing in a very small town. I'm curious in terms of stories right now around the world. What does Dan find the most compelling? So, opinion question for you, sir. What do you find most compelling? What story?
Oh man, the most compelling. Yeah. I think Syria, only because there are so many different players. And even the players that are aligned with the United States don't necessarily get along with each other.
Right.
So I just feel like the possibilities for miscalculation, but also short of something that's actually some sort of bloodshed or firefight. I mean, just in terms of the arguments when you start looking at Turkey versus the YPG versus the government versus ISIS. I mean, there's just it's really hard to make sense of the pieces, especially, when we can't be at the front of the battlefield the way we, that we would have been, walking patrols with Marines in the past.
Do you think most people understand that reaching into Syria is like putting your hand into kind of like a pile of rice, and that there's nothing, there's no tie rod to grab, there's no organization to partner with? There is none of that in Syria. Do you think most people understand that? And so whatever policy that you may want to implement, there's nobody there to help you implement it. And anybody that you grab is, I don't know if I would characterize it as a shot in the dark. It would certainly be a shot in a dimly lit room. Do you think most people understand that kind of quagmire, that kind of confused picture in Syria?
I think at this point, both because of the recent issues and the past ones, the people understand that there's a quagmire and it's difficult and that there's many different, players and factors and all of that. But I don't think the average American has any understanding of who's up or who's down or why things are the way they are or even who's against who.
From the Washington Post, Dan Lamoth is our guest. He appears on a fairly regular basis here on All Marine Radio. And so, Dan, let me take publicly thanks for doing this and taking time out of your day. Let's talk about some different topics, and then I want to get to a piece you wrote earlier this week. First of all, you and I had a little exchange about Secretary Mattis's press conference. Certainly stood in stark contrast from a lot of the other things you see at the Trump administration. Were you there at the press conference? And I'd be curious about your thoughts about it.
Yes, I was. I was the post reporter that was sent for that. Pretty well packed room. It seemed pretty obvious that they had some pretty hard left and right limits on what they were going to say. Some of that I think is for political reasons. Some of that I think is for security reasons, not wanting to limit their options, all of those sorts of things. So, I found it interesting when it came to some of the question and answer on, what constitutes a chemical weapon. And really, I think the subtext to that is, what constitutes a chemical weapon that the United States won't tolerate, which I think varies based on the substance involved.
Okay, and again, that's in some cases people say, well, that's getting the exacto now. So what was your takeaway? Is a chlorine barrel bomb, is that a weapon of mass destruction? Is when you walk?
I lean toward them wrestling with this right now. I mean, the secretary pretty much said as much, that they needed to basically define their policy on that.
Right.
But based on what they said for the reasons for the strike last week, the Tomahawk strike last week were, it was described as basically the Syrian government violating not only Geneva, but also the agreement that they struck in 2013 to avoid military action then by the United States. So that agreement, by most accounts between then and now, did not include chlorine, because chlorine has all kinds of practical purposes, you know, water treatment, cleaning, things like that. So chlorine wasn't included. So they have been using chlorine really right along. There's been numerous chlorine attacks documented between then and now, both when Obama was president, but really even in March with Trump. But to everybody's knowledge, at least, the first time that sarin or something like sarin was used since 2013 came up April 4, right. And you saw the military action afterward.
Right. And so the distinction is important because the distinction, you know, defines when you'll respond. And if chlorine barrel bombs are deemed chemical weapons and weapons of mass destruction, then you're going to see the United States get more involved, and which could be, you know, a trigger to some kind of a shooting event with the Russians. And give me your thoughts on that, Dan. The whole deconfliction line has been much written about, and really that's a telephone call. Somebody picking up, somebody who speaks English on the other end saying, or somebody on our side that speaks Russian, having an exchange with somebody to say, hey, this is what we're doing. Or, hey, your guys are up here, and they're a little bit too close to our guys. We need to either deconflict by time or by altitude. Talk to me. And, you know, it's my understanding is professional aviators and sometimes ops guys that get on that thing. Give me your thoughts on the specter of an Russian-American confrontation there. Do you think that... do you think the odds are good that will happen or not good?
I still think they're looking to do everything they can to avoid it, and I think that applies to the Russians as well. I do think there's a lot of posturing here and a lot of things that have been made more difficult over the last week or so.
Okay.
And I think that comes out in part, you know, we were getting regular updates every 90 days or so from the Pentagon on sort of the status of the deconfliction line, and you know, it was sort of a, you know, deputy assistant secretary level that was doing phone conferences with the Russians, you know, at least quarterly. And that information has been shut down. They have said point blank on the record, we will not talk about the deconfliction line anymore. So whether or not it's still working or not, I don't know. And whether or not it's still working every day or some days or on a whim, I mean, that's all been left, you know, kind of in the dark. With that said, we got some pretty clear signals when I traveled with the secretary in February, and we got some briefs both in Baghdad, but also from some of the pilots elsewhere, that it was by far from a perfect situation, that many times, even with the deconfliction line in place, they were finding Russian aircraft coming through airspace, not only in Syria, but also over Mosul in Iraq. That were coming out of Russia to do their business in Syria and flying through Iraq to do so, and that the pilots in the air on the American side didn't necessarily know when and where they were coming. So the solution then was in part to put F-22s up high because of their sensors and the fact that they could see what was kind of going on below them on the battlefield.
Right.
But when you're using F-22s basically to make sure that you're not missing anything on the deconfliction line, clearly that's not the – you know,
perfect.
That's not going to be the be-all, end-all anyway.
Right. And it's not really the design use of the F-22. But, you know, you use what you have to get what you need done. I'll tell you this. I mean, that used to happen. We had Russian helicopters. They weren't military helicopters, but in Afghanistan, which is as close as I've ever been to. We had Russian-trained, were they Georgian? Soldiers up at the Haditha Dam, and they just, their way is very different. I mean, for instance, their way is to shoot, and if you get killed when they shoot, then you shouldn't have been there. But you know they're there, and you should stay away. Their regard for human life, not so much. And also the Russian helicopter pilots, they flew where they wanted to fly, and oftentimes right through things that we were doing. And you looked at it in retrospect, and the aviators would sit down and talk, and it's like their conclusion, there's no way that they didn't do that deliberately, okay, with disregard for either what we're doing or who knows for what other reason. It was very interesting. And so to me, what if Central Command reported every one of these incidents on a daily basis, you would see a laundry list, and this is just me, that would drop your jaw in terms of the recklessness and in sometimes the aggressive nature of what the Russians are doing with disregard. And it's, in my opinion, it's just this, I think Vladimir Putin is a great bluff artist. His military isn't what it used to be. And I think he plays a weak hand very well. And I think it's with much bravado, and he knows that other people will back down short of confrontation. And so that's just my opinion. And I don't think the United States should be afraid of a confrontation with Russia in Syria. I think that he needs to get his pants pulled down in public and the world to see what he is. I mean, the world saw a piece of it earlier this week when you saw General Mattis in absolutely certain terms. There's no doubt in our minds what was used. There's no doubt in our mind who, I think the question was directed at he and General Vogel, and hop in here and rescue me, Dan. And then General Mattis said, I'll take this. And he said, there's no doubt who delivered it. There's no doubt what the weapon was. And then you saw the Russian, foreign minister, I want to say 48 hours ago say, there's absolutely no indication that that was a chemical weapon. So it seems like collision course of the United States and Russia ongoing. Your thoughts on as a military writer on the Russian capability and Putin playing a bluff, because the whole pretext for going to Syria was the weapons of mass destruction. Clearly, they didn't do that. And the other thing is, when you move those kind of things around an airfield, people know about them because they have to get out of the way because they're chemical weapons. They kill people. And if something happens with gas ordnance, then there's going to be nerve gas loose. Normally, that's not something you do on the down low, that the Syrians would do without telling other people that were in the vicinity that, hey, we're doing this. You need to, you need to stay away and just know that, if there's an accident, we'll scream. So your thoughts on that conglomeration of thoughts?
I think one piece that was pointed out several times last week, we got about an hour long brief, on background, so senior military officials last week.
Okay, hold on. Would you explain to everybody what background is?
Sure. So, and this is sometimes, frustrating for someone like myself.
Right.
So ideally we're always on the record and we're always using name sources, and journalists will take hits when we don't. Sometimes you don't have a choice, and sometimes, as in last week, the Pentagon says, we are willing to put these two guys forward for you to speak with, but they are not willing to be named. So even though they're speaking with numerous people at the same time, all media, we couldn't use their names. So it was this kind of bizarre situation, but the options were, do you want the information or not? And these are the ground rules. So protest was lodged, but that was the way it was offered up, and, I looked at it as, well, okay, basically this is the Pentagon speaking as the Pentagon,
right,
rather than, General or Admiral so-and-so speaking, essentially.
And so how does that get depicted in a story? Is that the whole unnamed, how do you cite that in a story?
Yeah, so in that case, they were cited as senior U.S. military officials.
Okay.
That were, briefed on or aware of the operation. And especially if you were reading, across several different news outlets, you would have seen the same or similar information,
okay,
and the same or similar quotes appear. So at that point, it's pretty easy to draw the conclusion that, these are guys that were not out in front of one reporter in a back room somewhere, but, basically briefing the press corps.
Interesting. My guest, Dan Lamoth, he of the Washington Post, writes on military topics for them, reports on military topics for them, and talking about current events of the course of the last 2 weeks. And what an easy thing it is to be a military writer these days, because you don't have to look far. change venues a little bit. Why the public obsession with the mother of all bombs? Does that strike you as funny? Because it's a large piece of ordnance. It certainly has a unique name, but it seems to have like hit the media with the same force that it hit the ground the other day. It seems to have caused quite a stir. Is that just a kind of a natural inquisition about things unique in the military, or what do you make of that? It's kind of amusing to me.
Yeah. So we actually, I mean, if you look at our story, you won't even see that phrase in it.
Okay.
And we avoided it because it was for us, for me, I looked at it and yes, there seemed to be a lot of hype. So the fact that it's, you know, that large, and the fact that, you know, the explosion is that large, and all of that is noteworthy. And but it was also interesting the way that the military handled it. So I cannot recall in 15 years a single press release saying, oh, by the way, we just dropped this one bomb. Separate, you know, separate press release, separate announcement. Like so I think that started this domino effect in terms of all the hype. With that said, yeah, it's a sexy story. So, yeah, it was all over TV, and I mean, much to my surprise, within about an hour, I had several requests to go on radio, TV, et cetera. And it was, okay, let me try and put this back in context. And yeah, one of the pieces of context I was trying to offer up is, you know, I don't know why they picked this bomb, at least not yet, but the end result probably isn't much different than if they had dropped 10 2,000-pound JDAMs.
Right, right, right.
So, I mean, I find that interesting, and I think there's some probably some psyop there, and I think right. There's some, you know, politics being played there as well.
Talk about the psyops piece of this separate press release, because I absolutely agree with you. You know, it's a when you do weaponeering in the military, right, you're looking for a piece of ordnance to have a certain effect on a certain target. If the target's buried, then you need to penetrate it. If you're looking to do considerable damage, then you need a big explosion. What do we have in theater that does that? Well, guess what? So the weapons guys come back, like, we have the mother of all bombs. Holy smokes, I forgot about that, you know? I was thinking more, more JDAM stuff. And then it's a function of weaponeering. Until you take that and then you leverage that just purely weaponeering thing into, you know what, there's some psyop value to this, because this is a big, big message that, look, we'll find your tunnels. We'll find you. And we're coming for you. So your thought, I think that's a pretty interesting little psyop piece.
Yeah, I mean, that was my reading on it, too. You know, particularly that they were trying to send a new and different message and something that looked different than it probably did a year ago.
Right.
With that said, I think the other piece of this is, you know, we've heard several times now that the Islamic State is all but or completely stamped out in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
And then you see an operation like this, and it's, oh, by the way, several dozen killed. You know, basically we're still going to go after them, and we hope to take care of this threat by the end of 2017. So, I mean, clearly the goalpost keeps getting moved there, too. I think all those factors are at play. They're trying to make it clear they're going after it. You know, very strongly right now. It appears that this decision was approved. I've heard as high as Votel, but no higher. So, you know, the question was posed to the president, did you approve, or, you know, did you call for something like this? And he kind of danced around it. He didn't want to give a straight answer, which I thought was interesting, because he could have easily said, you know, hey, I gave the commanders the authority to do what they feel they need to do, and they did. I don't know. It's interesting the way the optics on this look.
Right. Let me read your email. Hey, Mac, I've seen Dan's name associated a couple times with an item called Checkpoint. Could he explain what that is? What's Checkpoint, Dan, that people see your name with?
Sure. Checkpoint was started in 2014 when I was hired by the Post. Basically, they were looking for, aside from the typical newspaper story, a vehicle or platform where we could offer analysis, where we could offer context, and where we could occasionally do some lighter stuff too with, you know, videos that are going viral or social media or what have you, and you'll be a spot that veterans can also write as well on occasion.
Well, let us know, and we'll make sure we let people know. So it allows you to expand content.
Yeah, I think it allows us to be broader. I think it allows us to do more explanatory work, which I think especially when you start talking about something like the bomb in Afghanistan yesterday, it's, you know, what is this thing? What can it do? You know, it's got this name, but what does it really mean?
Well, you know what? I don't think you guys need to do that because we like to make a living doing that. So you guys feel free to shut that thing off. Mel, but you know, one of the things we try to do is that is when things like that happen, it's like, well, let me turn to All Marine Radio because I know those chuckleheads will be talking about it. And when they hear us talking about it in a very matter of fact way, they're like, oh, well, that was kind of disappointing. All those guys are saying is, yeah, it's a certain piece of ordnance delivered to a certain depth in the earth, and you didn't, and it was the best tool to do that. So that's about as sexy as it gets. The amusing piece of it is, you know, how it's delivered in kind of a ghetto kind of way, not very high speed, but that's kind of the amusing about it. The all right, can we take a break? When we come back, there's a couple stories that have been in Checkpoint. As I kind of did a little research for you to come on. Certainly, the first one I want to talk about is female Marines pressuring male colleagues to join groups that are essentially looking to combat not only online behavior, but this whole the segment of the Marine population that would somehow be disrespectful to female Marines. I want to talk to you about that. I also want to talk about no charges. Relative to a SEAL instructor implicating in the drowning of a trainee. I read some stuff about that. I think it was in the Post, and I was curious about that because it looked like a terrible, terrible, terrible story. So, we're gonna take a quick break, come back, talk about those.
Sure.
Awesome. My guest from the Washington Post this morning is a military writer. If you check out the blog Checkpoint, you will see Dan's name, and you don't have to look very hard or very far to find his work. So gracious enough to join us here on a Friday edition of All Marine Radio. More of that coming up next on the All Warrior Radio Network.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
My name is Juan Perez, Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold. Be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone. you know, when you're networking there with folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
A message from DAV to all returning veterans. Thank you. Thank you for doing your duty. Thank you for doing our bidding. Thank you for laying it all on the line. Thank you for stepping up and not backing down. Thank you for putting your future on hold to put our enemies on notice. Thank you for putting your buddies' lives ahead of your own. Thank you for putting yourself in harm's way. Thank you for defending our freedom, for displaying your honor, for being a hero, even though you don't want to be called one. For all this and more, DAV thanks you, and we're here to help you. Expert DAV advisors will make sure you get the health, disability, and financial benefits you were promised and earned. If you're a veteran, visit DAV.org for free help. And again, thank you.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Here on a Friday, Good Friday, the 14th of April. And so if you're going to travel and if you have time off, so be careful while you're traveling. Fortunate to be joined this morning, as he does on occasion, by Dan Lamoth. He is a military writer for the Washington Post. His blog is called Checkpoint. All you got to do is search that, Washington Post, Checkpoint, all one word, and Dan's work will come up. Dan, let's talk about an item that has kind of moved to the background with other more dramatic current events, but nonetheless something that consumed the Marine Corps here in the recent past, and that is the online controversy that surrounds the harassment of women. Of women Marines. You wrote a piece about that, and tell everybody about the piece and what you reported on.
Sure. So this ties in with the Marines United website scandal, you know, the sharing of nude photos without people's permission, things of that sort. And I found it interesting the amount of pushback anytime I write a story like this, because you immediately hear, well, why did they share these photos? And I mean, the long and short of it is I think that plenty of people do at this point, and a lot of times they do it with their partners, and then those relationships don't work out. And you can question it after the fact, but the bottom line is a lot of people find themselves in this situation at this point and find their photographs and their images going a whole lot of places they never really thought about at the time.
Does that surprise you, Dan, that kind of and I'll call it victim blaming, because you know what? I think that's an easy defense. So, okay, so I'm in a relationship with a woman, and look, I was talking to an educator that I know, and they kind of chuckled and they said, "Hey, Mac, this goes on at every grammar school, middle school, high school, and university in the country. Their problem is they don't have nearly the levers that you guys have. You guys have a little bit more control than they do. Hell, you have your own legal system." And the rules are not expected to be the same. In the rest of the country, you know, we live with the American justice system. We live with our laws, good or bad, in some states. He said there's 35 states that have laws about revenge porn that some of this stuff falls into. To me, it's kind of surprising when I hear that. It's like, do you not know, you know, the way the world is today, how easy that young people send a naked picture or a picture of their genitals? Do you not realize that that is almost an everyday occurrence for them? And it's surprising me that some of them look at you and they say, well, you know, it doesn't make it right. And if she sent it, then it belongs to him, right? And I said, yeah, I don't think that's true. So he's allowed to exploit that. And so that to me has been one of the most surprising parts of this whole discussion.
Yeah, I mean, there's a certain level of trust there. I mean, there's also a certain level of judgment, that goes into, you know, do I really trust this person? And what's the worst thing that could happen here? So that, yes, that's a piece to it also. But yeah, I mean, this happens all the time. And oftentimes, you know, you regularly hear about, you know, one partner that pressures another to do it. You know, like, oh, just send it. Well, you know, if you've been out with that person for 6 months, 2 years, 5 years, whatever, you're probably way more inclined to do so. And, you know, especially if there's some sort of negative consequence for not doing so. So I think that's how we get here.
Right.
The reason I wrote this piece is specifically because 100-plus women at this point, and really this is really just part of a trend, where many female Marines, I think, for years have wanted to just kind of fit in and not wanted to rock the boat and just do their job. They still want that, but they also feel way more compelled to speak up as a group than they did in the past. And as a result, you see things like this letter that was shared with me for publication, and it's basically 100 women who have all served up to colonel, and really mostly staff officers, who said, I've had enough. I'm willing to put my name to that. The headquarters line is that there will, you know, that they would agree with what's in this letter, but they're concerned about negative consequences in their unit or, you know, with their colleagues or whatever anyway. But they're still willing to put their names to it. So, I mean, you get all kinds of reaction to that kind of decision and to that kind of story. But the bottom line is I thought it was a new piece and a new thread of discussion to this whole conversation.
And that is them, those 100 women Marines, putting their name and something very going public with it.
Yes, exactly. And this is actually like something to the effect of the second or third different group that has popped up in various formats, you know, Facebook groups and other things.
Right.
There's one called Not in My Marine Corps.
Right.
They're all, I think, basically similar overlapping messages of enough is enough. And some of them have men that are members, some of them don't. But really, I think they're just trying to make sure the message gets out and gets all the way down to the E3, E2 level.
Email for you. Hey, Mac, I'm curious. Was Dan present at the hearing, the Open Senate Armed Service Committee, where the commandant got wire brushed? And if he was, what were his thoughts relative to that? So were you at – did you attend that?
I was not at that one.
Okay.
I had a colleague that was there. I'm very aware of it. He's in a tough seat right now when it comes to this. He's under the microscope. If he says too much, he's running up against potentially unlawful command influence if any of these guys get court-martialed. If he says nothing, that sets a different tone. So, I mean, I don't know what the right answer is. I just know that he has no easy choices.
Interesting. There's a fight in the Marine Corps, and I'll read you a text message relative to this whole idea of women in the Marine Corps. And the text is this. This group advocates 20% of Marines be women. How does that make us better? And there's a lot of male Marines that feel that. It's like, look, absolutely they should be treated with respect. But we have an incredibly young force, and it's young for a reason, because it's got to get up and go. And when we say get up and go, we mean physically get up and go. And we need everybody that's able to do that in a young force like that. How does it make the Marine Corps better? So I'm curious, from a reporter's standpoint, Do you see this this deeper debate of, you know, when I think it was Secretary Mavis said the Marine Corps ought to be 25% female, and you know, and Marines hear that, and I'll include myself in that group and say, how does that work? You know, how does it work? Because we're not interchangeable pieces, and I don't care what anybody says, it's not that way. And so there's guys who hold this position that say it's an absolute farce, the people that serve this, and it's a bit of lack of moral courage that they won't look at Congress and say it can't be that way in the Marine Corps. I'm curious, do you see that debate as a reporter, or does it stay safely below the waterline?
I think it makes it up when it rises to this level.
Okay.
And I think there have been very similar conversations when it comes to diversity issues in general. You know, I remember the Marine Corps had a series of commercials several years ago that very much seemed to be aimed at recruiting black officers.
Yeah.
And, you know, the statistics would bear out that the percentage of black officers in the Marine Corps is not at all representative of, A, you know, black people in general in the Marine Corps, but B, also of America. Now, there are probably any number of reasons for that, but I think it's at least something that probably needs to be explored. And when you start running up against all of these issues where women in the Marine Corps have been victimized, and I don't think there's really any other way to put this Marines United thing.
No.
I think it's at least worth asking the question, should we have more women? And if so, in what form? Where should they serve? What kind of jobs? And having those conversations, I don't think there's any harm in that.
It'd be interesting to see the because again, there's that which you would say in public, and then that you would never say in public. It would be very interesting to hear that thing. And I think, you know, we're afraid to have that discussion in public, because and this is no. It's really interesting to watch the dance that goes on around, for instance, I had Kate Germano on, and you know Kate, she's a retired Marine officer. She was relieved. Hell, you've written about her. She was relieved as a 4th Battalion commander at Parris Island. She had pretty high standards and says that she was treated unfairly. Her criticism of the Marine Corps starts as how we recruit them, how they're treated as poolies, what we do with them in boot camp, and by doing things the way we do it, we set low expectations of women, and we also set men on a track to not respect female Marines. Had her on. Then I had Major General Paul Kennedy on, who's the head of the Marine Corps Recruiting Command, and his comment relative, and I teed up all of her criticism, and he said, you know, Mac, she was, when she wrote that, she was right. It's not the way we do it anymore. We now target, there's women that wrestle in the United States. It's a large program around the country. It's one of the fastest growing sports in high schools in the country. There's women that do mixed martial arts. We are now targeting them. We never used to target women. We used to go recruit men. As a recruiter, I was required to recruit 900 men and 50 women. So when you set up the table, women would come. And that's how you'd find them. But you didn't specifically profile and target them. You just took them as they came. And he said, so Kate's criticism was valid when she made it. He said, but it's no longer valid. And relative to recruit training. And then he made his argument. I don't know that we as a Corps, though, are comfortable having that argument in public. I'm curious. Are Marine officers candid with you about their feelings about women Marines and quantities in the Marine Corps, or do you get political speak whenever you go down that road?
That really depends if we're having an on-the-record conversation or a conversation over beer. I've certainly heard the argument made that women, you know, should never be in the infantry, and that whole debate, despite gender integration being, you know, approved and all that, has not gone away. It probably will never go away.
Right.
But at some point, there's going to be that woman who gets over the hump and passes IOC. And I think when that happens, that's going to start some wheels in turn, at least in terms of who is this person and what path did they take that had them ready to do this.
Right.
I find it, your comments from General Kennedy, I knew him a bit back when he was running public affairs, a couple jobs ago for him.
Sure.
And I find that interesting. And yes, when you've got women out there who are playing rugby and playing, you know, co-ed sports that are, you know, if not contact, then at least, you know, there is, you know, risk of injury regularly, and, you know, they're ultra marathoners and all kinds of other things. You know, I get the take that there are probably few, but when people say there is no one who can do this,
right.
I find anytime you say never, that you're setting yourself up for failure. There's going to be those couple out there of whatever. And the same thing goes for journalism. There's plenty of times where I'll have people, had somebody yesterday that argued that, you know, we had never been negative about President Obama on his vacations. And I spent 30 seconds on Google and spit up a story, and from 2013 was literally the headline of the story. It was in a column, an opinion piece, but it was, you know, Obama goes on vacation as the world burns.
Right.
And it's like, you know, like anytime we start looking at the world in absolutes, it's just sets people up for failure.
Right. I think the Marine Corps took a huge step when it identified standards. And this is my personal opinion. I don't think you're going to see women be able to have multiple tours as infantrymen. It is not. Their bodies are not built for it. And I'm sure that there will be onesies and twosies that maybe are able to do it. But to go back to that year after year after year, to put those packs on, to carry that weight year after year after year, it's incredibly demanding. I think personally that what's going to happen is the DOD is going to break a lot of women physically. And then they're going to revisit the issue and then say, you know what? There is so much disability that have come out of opening this door. We don't believe it's prudent. And it's one of the arguments Darrell Mattis made. He said, we are setting them up for failure. They're not going to have long careers in these MOSs, which what does that do for the competitiveness? And he said, and then I think what I read was, but you know what? The nation's going to have to find that out. Our job is to set standards. We'll set those standards, blah, 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 blah. And so that's maybe a longer view, a longer view of the issue, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of wonder where this situation kind of just works itself out, too.
Right.
I mean, there are plenty of men who join the Marine Corps and, you know, they do their first term and they're out anyway.
Right.
So at some point, I think there's a personal choice involved. Right. There's plenty of people that come in and then they lat move. So, I mean, I don't know. I think that some of this stuff may sort itself out ultimately.
Okay. All right. Another email question for you. Hey, Mac, I'm going to ask an opinion question to a reporter, so I don't know if he'll answer it, but I'll ask it anyway. What is his take on how the Marine Corps is handling this? I think the Marine way, if we do it right, is we take our phase shot, we fix it, and then we try to set or become an example for universities and other schools of how we do this. I'm curious, relative to Dan's observations, are we doing this? Do we still have our head in the sand? Dan?
Well, I would say this. I look at this, and it's been striking to me that official Marine Corps line, not just from a general or from individuals, but like the party line now, you know, the institutional line, is so forcefully against this. And I think that's maybe they didn't quite have to wrestle with this to the extent they do now that we're talking that there's nude photos involved in all of that. With that said, I think there's also been sort of this undercurrent of we didn't see this coming. And I mean, it's always hard to predict the future, but there's been stories out there since like 2012, 2013 about, you know, kind of the rise of these Facebook groups and, you know, the abusive nature and, you know, the harassment that goes online and how much of it was active duty or recent vet. So it's not like it came out of the clear blue.
Right. No, and I'll tell you what, and it's gone on long before that. It's interesting, as an infantry guy, I would never serve in a mixed-gender unit till the end of my career. So, I mean, you know, this whole world of the co-ed Marine Corps is almost like kind of a going to the zoo for the first time. They did what? They do what? I can even tell you combat experiences. And I remember being in Ramadi, and somebody forwarded an email that was a picture of a flyer that they were having salsa night and having dances down at Takadam, while, you know, it was on in Fallujah and Ramadi and everywhere else. And you just looked at it and you went, wow. Let me just give you, do any of these women play co-ed contact sports? The answer to that would be no. Why is the Marine Corps looking for the 1/1000th of 1% that can do this? I think because we politically have to would be the answer to that. We both know we're going to break them. So it's a moral issue relative to leaders in the Marine Corps looking at the Senate Armed Service Committee and telling them that's what's going to happen. I guess, and this is my thought, if they look at you and they say shut up and color, then the shut up, then you shut up and color. And that's the way it goes. I want to ask you about before I let you go, Dan, I want to ask you real quick about the SEAL instructor, and drowning. That story, when I saw it, for somebody to drown in a pool, I grab the side of my head and say, what in God's name could have been going on that somebody doesn't see somebody struggling or somebody go under the water and not come up to the extent that you can't bring them back. No charges were filed with the SEAL instructor. So could you give everybody a thumbnail and bring everybody up to snuff relative to this case?
Yeah, so this goes back at least a year at this point, and you had an individual at Buds that drowned in a pool surrounded by instructors, and several instructors there, other people there. So the question became, how in the world is this possible? And there was one instructor in particular that, you know, was in the pool with him, and according to numerous accounts, had to some extent dunked him repeatedly while he was struggling. The individual drowns. The autopsy comes back, and the cause of death is homicide. Now, there's the clinical definition of homicide and the criminal definition. This was more of the, you know, this was basically against his will forced sort of situation. That was the autopsy. The NCIS and others looked at it and said there was no wrongdoing here, at least criminally. So we're still sort of sorting out the details in terms of, you know, was there any kind of NJP? Was this something that there were extenuating circumstances of which we are not aware right now? Also on the autopsy side, you know, that those are official records, so we felt very comfortable using them. But at the same time, you know, what do we not know about that declaration? So it's not over. They acknowledged that there were no charges this week, but they have yet to cough up any kind of investigation report on this, which is standard. And we've also heard that there is video of this, and that also has not been released. So it will be interesting to see where this goes and how long it takes.
Okay. One more email, and I know I promised, but I'll let you go. Hey, Mac, I know Dan has been covering the issues at Parris Island. Can he give us the latest on that? And the second question, does he think there will be any senior leaders that are held in any way culpable for what happened down there? I agree with you, Mac, in a comment that you made earlier this week or late last week, that the message is not going to get out until you see a sergeant major and a regimental commander face charges of dereliction of duty, just like these sergeants and staff sergeants are facing, among other charges. When you see that, then you'll see some supervision. That's the message that needs to get sent. The same with Marines United. Enough classes, enough nonsense. Lay the wood, send them to the brig for a few months. That'll get everybody's attention. But all the rest of this nonsense and NJP bullshit is just a slap on the wrist. Nobody cares about that. Laying the wood to somebody is what historically works in the Marine Corps. It's what gets attention. I'm curious about Dan's thoughts about what has happened at Parris Island and if it will include senior leadership at some point. Dan?
I have no sense for that right now, and I wouldn't toss out any kind of personal opinion on whether it should, not knowing what I don't know.
Okay.
With that said, overall, we are moving to courts martial on at least a few of these guys. There was three investigations last year that kind of came up and were released almost at the same time. In one of those cases, we had an Article 32 at Quantico. I sat in on that. That involved, I don't want to say more typical behavior, but, it was more of the, extended incentive training, things of that sort. The second one involves the Marine who ended up going over the railing and dying last year. And it's even a question mark at this point whether that's going to be ultimately deemed a suicide or more of an accidental death. That, too, is going toward courts martial. There were two individuals who have been charged at this point. But that case, we don't have nearly as many details aside from what was in the documents because they waived the right to an Article 32.
Right.
So they're going straight to trial.
Right. All right. So you wouldn't venture an opinion on I'll venture an opinion. I don't think it'll happen, but I think it should. And that's why I said that. It was my issue with Abu Ghraib, sergeant, staff sergeant, sergeant first class, and then a brigadier general allowed to retire. He needs to face the same kind of discipline that they do. Why is he exempt? And we all learn in officer candidate school, everything your unit does or fails to do is what you're responsible for. But it doesn't seem like we hold senior people to the same standard. They're allowed to get out of town. Anyway, Lamont, do you have any big plans over the Easter weekend, or are you going to be nose to the grindstone because North Korea and Syria are in the nation's focus?
Well, the plans would be to celebrate Easter and go to brunch and maybe get some softball practices in on Saturday, but we'll see if current events allow that.
What position do you play on your softball team?
I'm usually in the outfield, left center fielder.
Can you hit? Are you a player?
I mean, I've got some pop, and I'm left-handed, so that's handy too.
There you go. Favorite baseball team is?
I'm a Red Sox guy.
Oh boy! Favorite player?
David Ortiz probably always will be.
Oh my God! I'll be surprised if you're ever invited back. Although I'll tell you, one of the great moments David Ortiz in history is when he says. What's his famous quote after the bombings? This is our fucking town, right? So you have a guy from the Dominican Republic. What an awesome day on national TV, and what a great day for Boston. I don't know if you know Bob Nielsen, but he's of the 100 Entrepreneurs Foundation, tremendously active with veterans, amputees, guys wounded, getting them into the construction business, getting them to become entrepreneurs. He sent me a link, and it might have been from a Boston newspaper. I wondered if you saw the story that about amputees and other people not being able to run in the Boston Marathon. Have you seen that story at all?
No, I haven't.
Interesting. Yeah, it's run on Patriots Day, and those guys being excluded from the race. Anyway, happy Easter to you. Good luck in left center field, and remember, keep your hands back, especially in slow pitch softball. And thanks for doing this, Dan. Enjoyed it.
All right. Thank you.
There you have it. Dan Lamont from the Washington Post here on a Friday edition of All Marine Radio right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. We're going to take a quick break, and hopefully the gunner is going to join us. Yeah. Hopefully. So sit back, relax, enjoy it. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner. Proven and dependable.